Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now covering Deuteronomy chapter 28, the first 14 verses. We're going to call this section Blessings from Mount Gerizim. Our context is this. Moses is still on the plains of Moab talking to the Israelites, giving his farewell discourses to the Israelites before they cross over under Joshua into the Promised Land, cross over the Jordan River into the Promised Land right before Moses is about to die. And in the last chapter, Deuteronomy 27, Moses gave them told them how curses were going to be pronounced from Mount Ebal. These curses, of course, were later pronounced when Joshua got there, Mount Ebal being just north of the Shechem, which is in the valley between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. So that was the bad news for the Israelites if they disobeyed. Now, the first 14 verses in Deuteronomy 28 is the good news if Israel obeys. And then in our next audio, we will finish up chapter 28, verses 15 through 68, more curses from Mount Ebal. So it's very interesting. Chapter 27, 26 verses, curses. Chapter 28, from verse 15 to 68, which is 53 verses, curses. And now we have a measly 14 verses of blessings. Well, what does this tell you? Well, I think it's because God is using the carrot and the stick on the Israelites, and since the Israelites were so rebellious, there had to be a lot more stick than there was carrot. Human nature, my folks, is not that God doesn't want to bless obedience. He does. He wants to bless an obedient people, but if the people aren't obedient, they need to be scared witless. And boy, when you read these curses, you will see that they were very, very serious, enough to scare anybody. But we'll do that next audio. This audio, let's look at the good news, the blessing, starting in verses 1 and 2 of Deuteronomy 28. Now it shall be, if you diligently obey the Lord your God, being careful to do all his commandments, which I command you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the earth. All these blessings will come upon you and overtake you if you obey the Lord your God. Overtake you. Isn't that something? It's like you being chased by a blessing and it tracks you down and floods you over. The Lord your God will set you high above. That's what happened to him in the times of David and Solomon. In fact, during the times of Solomon, which was in the 900s B.C., if I remember correctly, Solomon was the top dog in the ancient Near East. Syria couldn't touch him. Egypt couldn't touch him. The Hittites were gone. The Assyrians were weak. Solomon was it. He was the top dog. And so it actually happened. But of course, after Solomon, there was a lot of disobedience, and then they got scattered. Now, notice how these blessings that are promised in verse 2 are the very opposite of the curses in verses 15 through 44 of this chapter. I will point out the parallel curses as we go through. Now, let's look at the question of, are these blessings temporal or are they spiritual? Well, John Gill says that only temporal blessings in Canaan are here contemplated, and I think that's true, but I think that when we interpret this typologically as a type of the blessings of the new covenant people of God, there are two possible errors that we can encounter. First, we can take the temporal blessings of Israel to mean merely temporal blessings for the church and say, well, end up with a health and wealth gospel. Kenneth Copeland and Benny Hinn, way, we're going to get rich. Well, that's, of course, stupid. But on the other hand, we can take the temporal blessings of Israel as the types of church of the church's spiritual blessings, which is fine. But then we say that the church has no temporal blessings promised at all. I think that's going too far the other way. I mean, are we going to be is the new covenant the covenant of poverty? I don't think so. I think that God promises temporal blessings. He gives you financial wisdom and discipline and wisdom on where to invest or how to invest or how to handle your employees or how to start this business, and you know, you end up with prosperity. You're not squandering your wealth on fast boats and fast planes and pretty mistresses and all the other stupid thing that worldly rich people do. You're not doing that. You're not getting hooked on drugs, and so you get financially blessed. So let's take these blessings here that are coming upon the old covenant people of God as types of the blessings that come under the new covenant, and those blessings are both spiritual and temporal. We go now to Deuteronomy 28, verses 3 through 5. Blessed shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the country. Blessed shall be the offspring of your body, and the produce of your ground, and the offspring of your beast, the increase of your herd, and the young of your flock. Blessed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Now, blessed shall you be in the city and the country. That's just the Hebrew way of of pointing out extremes and saying everything in between is covered. Blessed shall be you in the city. That means all of your civil employment, such as business and trade, is going to be prosperous. Blessed shall you be in the country. That would be all your agricultural pursuits. Now, this is opposite of the curse in Deuteronomy 28:16. You will be cursed in the city and cursed in the country if you don't obey. Now, verse 4 says, blessed shall be the offspring of your body and the produce of your ground and the offspring of your beast. Offspring of your body is your children, your humans. Offspring of your beast, that could either be the herd and the flock, or it could be other animals like camels and asses. It says the offspring of your beast and the increase of your herd and the young of your flock might just be a restatement of offspring of your beast, or it could be that the beast includes even camels and asses. Doesn't matter. The point is you're going to be blessed with your animals, your livestock. And then in verse 5 it says, blessed be your basket and your kneading bowl. In the basket would be food provisions for the house, as the NIV Study Bible says, like olives and grapes. It was never to be empty. It was always sufficient. You would always have enough for your house. The kneading bowl was to make bread, so there would always be bread for the family. The opposite curse is given in Deuteronomy 28:17. Cursed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl if you don't obey. We go now to Deuteronomy 28, verse 6. Blessed shall you be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out. Again, coming in means coming into your house. When you go out to your work. So, again, the Hebrew way of putting parentheses around everything that's in the middle by pointing out the extremes. This phrase, going in and going out and coming in, refers to all business and employments of life, whether indoors or out of doors, whether public or private. It includes journeys away from home and coming back to home. It includes going to war and coming back from war. Adam Clark says the coming in blessing is constituted by the fact that they would find no evil that happened to their family when they were gone to work. I would think it would even mean home businesses, people, businesses that you were working with inside the house. A lot of times wives would do that too. So anyway, just blessed all over the place. The opposite curse is given in Deuteronomy 28:19. Cursed shall you be when you come in, and cursed shall you be when you go out. Again, if you're disobedient to the law. We go now to Deuteronomy 28, verse 7. The Lord shall cause your enemies who rise up against you to be defeated before you. They will come out against you one way and will flee before you seven ways. Now, actually, in the history of Israel, there were lots of enemies defeated by Israel, namely the Philistines on the southwest, the Moabites on the southeast across the Jordan River, the Syrians to the northeast, the Edomites to the south, and the Ammonites to the east, a little bit north of the Moabites. In other words, all the nations which encircled Israel, Israel eventually whopped them, culminated in the time of Solomon. And then, of course, they blew it all during the time of the kings because they were defeated and scattered. It says here, your enemies will come out one way and flee seven ways. If you'll take the picture of a single column of enemy marching toward Israel, and after the rout, they're scattered all over the place, fleeing seven ways, and seven is not meant to be taken literally. That just means in all sorts of different directions. That's what happens in a rout. The opposite curse, the parallel curse, is given in Deuteronomy 28, verse 25. The Lord shall cause you to be defeated before your enemies. You will go out one way against them, but you will flee seven ways before them, and you will be an example of terror to all the kingdoms of the earth. Now, of course, this is assuming they disobey. The exact opposite will happen to them is when they were obedient. We go now to Deuteronomy 28, verses 8 through 11. The Lord will command the blessing upon you in your barns and in all that you put your hand to, and he will bless you in the land which the Lord your God gives you. The Lord will establish you as a holy people to himself, as he swore to you, if you keep the commandments of the Lord your God and walk in his ways. Now that condition, if you keep the commandments, it's everywhere through the book of Deuteronomy. So all the peoples of the earth will see that you are called by the name of the Lord, and they will be afraid of you. The Lord will make you abound in prosperity, in the offspring of your body, and in the offspring of your beast, and in the produce of your ground, in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers to give you. Now, the swearing by God is mentioned twice. Verse 9, the Lord will establish you as a holy people, as he swore to you. And then in verse 11, it says that the land was sworn by God, sworn to the fathers to give the Israelites. Let's look at some previous places where that might have occurred. Deuteronomy 7:12, then it shall come about, because you listen to these judgments and keep and do them, that the Lord your God will keep with you his covenant and his loving kindness, which he swore to your forefathers. And I'm sure it's talking about the Abrahamic promises. Genesis 15, Genesis 22, and so forth. We see also in Exodus 19, verses 5 through 6, now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, there's that if then, if you keep the covenant, which shows that the covenant is conditional, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples. The Mosaic covenant is conditional. Then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Well, in our passage in Deuteronomy 28, verses 8 through 11, it says that the Lord will establish you as a holy people in verse 9, and in Exodus 19, a holy nation. That's pretty close. So I just think all this swearing that God did for the people of Israel is referring basically to the Abrahamic promises, which were land, offspring, and blessings. And of course, they would have to be a holy nation in order to be. They needed a land so they could be a nation, and if they're going to have offspring and blessings to the nations, they needed to be a holy nation, a holy people. But at all, let's don't lose the forest looking at the trees here. The overall aspect of this verse is that you got to keep his commandments and you get blessed. Now, this idea of keeping the commandments, this is a general keeping of the commandments. It doesn't mean you keep them perfectly, because nobody could, and nobody can keep the commandments perfectly. That means nobody's ever going to be blessed. By Deuteronomy chapter 28, verses 1 through 14. Isaiah 1:19 says this, if you consent and obey, you will eat the best of the land. So these conditional promises everywhere, obedience is enjoined everywhere in the Old Testament. It just means in general, you can't do it perfectly. And once again, let me point out that this promise of all these blessings is conditional on you keeping the commandments. Well, they didn't keep the commandments at the end of their history. They got scattered and unestablished as a holy people by the Assyrians in 722 B.C. as far as northern Israel was concerned, when they got wiped out, and southern Israel got wiped out by the Babylonians in 586 B.C. And, of course, Israel, after the return, reestablished itself and then got wiped out by the Romans in 70 A.D. Disobedience has bad effects, folks. Look at the United States of America to make an obvious parallel. Things are not going well here, and they're not going to go well until this nation repents, and we don't seem like we're interested in that yet, as a general rule. Now, verse 10, Deuteronomy 28 says, so all the peoples of the earth will see that you are called by the name of the Lord. In other words, when you call Israel, you will call Yahweh. You will associate the two names, Israel and Yahweh. Because the Israelites are God's people, Deuteronomy 14, verse 1, first part of the verse, you are the sons of the Lord your God. God tells the Israelites, you are the sons of the Lord your God. Deuteronomy 26:18, the Lord has today declared you to be his people, a treasured possession, as he promised you, that you should keep all his commandments. So the people of Israel were his people. They were a treasured possession, the apple of God's eye, and so forth. Now, there's two things we need to hold in tension here. It's true that the people as a whole were the covenant people, and God really looked after them for that reason. But we also need to remember that actually, pragmatically, they were sinners. They sinned all the time. They were unredeemed. They were idolaters. They had to be chastised all the time. It's the difference between God's grace and man's sin. Now, in verse 10, if the people obey, verse 10 says that obedience will make the other peoples afraid of the Israelites. The peoples of the earth will see you and they will be afraid of you. That was also mentioned in Deuteronomy 11:25. No man will be able to stand before you. The Lord your God will lay the dread of you and the fear of you on all the land on which you set foot, as he has spoken to you. That was an earlier promise that the nations were going to fear the Israelites, which they did. That's why old Balak, king of Moab, spent so much time and effort trying to get Balaam to come down and curse the Israelites, because he was scared to death of them, because they knew of all the incredible miracles, incredible plagues that were laid on Egypt's head, and that news had gotten around all the ancient Near East, and the peoples were afraid. So all of this is confirming what has already happened and what's going to happen when people are obedient. They're going to be afraid of Yahweh. Because they see Israel and they think, oh my goodness, Israel's God is Yahweh, and you don't mess with him. Deuteronomy 28, 12 through 14, and we'll finish up this short audio. The Lord will open for you his good storehouse, the heavens, to give rain to your land in its season and to bless all the work of your hand. And you shall lend to many nations, but shall not borrow. The Lord will make you the head and not the tail, and you will only be above and you will not be underneath, if you listen to the commandments of the Lord your God. Again, there's the condition again. The commandments which I charge you today to observe them carefully, and do not turn aside from any of the words which I command you today to the right or to the left to go after other gods to serve them. So obedience, no idolatry. You're going to be the head and not the tail. You're going to be the creditor and not the debtor. You're going to be lending and not borrowing. And the storehouse, which is the heavens, where all the wealth is stored, the rain and so forth. The storehouse that holds the rain in heavens will give rain to your land and bless all the work of your hand. So, this metaphor of the storehouse of rain here is mentioned a lot in the scriptures. As the NIV Study Bible says, the Bible often refers to the heavens as a storehouse of precipitation. Job 38:22, have you entered the storehouses of the snow, or have you seen the storehouses of the hail? Psalm 135:7. He causes the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. Who makes lightnings for the rain? Who brings forth the wind from his treasuries? That's his storehouses. So the wind's up there, the rain's up there, the snow's up there. Jeremiah 10:13, when he utters his voice, there is a tumult of waters in the heavens, and he causes the clouds to ascend from the end of the earth. He makes lightning for the rain, and he brings out the wind from his storehouses. So we got a tumult, we got waters in the heavens, and we got wind in the storehouses. And of course, with Hebrew parallelism there, the storehouses is parallel with heavens. They're the same thing. Jeremiah 51:16, when he utters his voice, there is a tumult of waters in the heavens, and he causes the clouds to ascend from the end of the earth. He makes lightning for the rain and brings forth the wind from his storehouses, which is basically the same thing that Jeremiah said 40 chapters earlier in Jeremiah 10. So you see, that's a common Hebrew metaphor. Now, obedience brings rains from the heavens, and it brings prosperity and makes the Israelites the head and not the tail. The parallel curse is given in Deuteronomy 28, verse 44. This is talking about the non-believer or the non-Israelite. He shall lend to you, the non-believer, shall lend to you, the Israelite, but you, the Israelite, will not lend to him, the non-believer. He, the non-believer, shall be the head, and you, the Israelite, will be the tail. Both of these passages basically say the creditor is the head, the debtor is the tail. The obvious application of that is, New Testament Christian, please stay out of debt. Your life will be so much happier. You will be so blessed. Stay out of debt. Oh, I know you can get into it. Well, what about my house? Okay, well, I'll soften it a little bit. Stay out of debt by borrowing for depreciable assets. If you want to invest in a hard asset, an appreciable asset, as an investment, okay, you can risk your house doing that, okay. Realizing you might lose your investment and might get it back. But stay out of debt. You'll be so much happier in your life, especially if you're trying to raise a family. Better to live poor than to live rich and to be in debt. Because if you're living rich and in debt, it's not really you that's got all those riches. It's your creditor that has all those riches. Now, when it says Israel will be the head and not the tail, if they obey and they lend money to other nations, that doesn't mean that Israel will unjustly dominate other nations. It just means they're going to be in charge and command. I've been a debtor and I've been a creditor, and I'll tell you what, I like being a creditor better because I'm the one that calls the shots. And when I'm a debtor, I go with my hat in my hand when I go talk to the creditor. That's just life. Being the head indicates a possession of independent power and great dignity and acknowledged excellence. For example, in Isaiah 9, verses 14 through 15. So the Lord cuts off head and tail from Israel, both palm branch and bulrush, in a single day. The head is the elder and honorable man, and the prophet who teaches falsehood is the tail. So there's another good metaphor in the Old Testament. The heads are the honorable good guys, and the tail is the dishonorable bad guys. Ladies and gentlemen, we have finished Deuteronomy 28, verses 1 through 14. And that gets us ready for our next audio, More Curses from Mount Ebal, Deuteronomy 28, verses 15 through 68. I hope you stay tuned to enjoy contemplating all the curses you don't have to go through in our next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.